One thing about federal procurement, there's always something new. Congressional tinkering and case law mean some fresh wrinkles to watch for in 2016. As part of our Federal Drive series looking ahead to 2016, we turn to attorney Wojciech Kornacki, who works procurement cases for Center Law and Consulting. Wojciech, great to have you back.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
All right. So what are you looking for in 2016? There have been some laws affecting procurement, both in the defense authorization bills and in the FITARA legislation. So things are a little bit different going into the next year. What do you see?
Yes, it looks like 2016 is shaping up to be a very exciting year for the federal contractor community. First, probably the two most important United States Supreme Court cases that deal with federal contracting that will probably have a very significant impact, that also impact on some of the laws that you addressed, are Kingdomware versus United States and Universal Health Services versus United States. The first case essentially deals with how federal government sets aside contracts for small businesses. So this will have a dramatic impact on all small businesses, just depending how the United States Supreme Court decides.
Yeah, what's that one all about?
This case is about a small business that essentially is challenging how the federal government set aside some of the contracts that the small business says it was entitled to. So the United States Supreme Court expressed interest in this case, and they will be reviewing whether the federal government is complying with all the legislation from Congress on small business set-aside. So this will be a very important case for the federal contracting community and especially small businesses.
And what is Kingdomware saying that the government is not doing that it should be?
Well, Kingdomware is saying that it was entitled to some set-aside contracts, and the federal agency was saying, no, you were not. And based on that, we awarded them to other businesses. So this has very significant interest from the small business community and also from the federal contracting. First, Kingdomware appealed this case in the United States Court of Appeals and the Court of Federal Claims, and both courts sided with the agency. So then they went further and they appealed to the United States Supreme Court, and the United States Supreme Court decided to take this case. So this could have a very significant impact on how business is done in 2016 and thereafter.
So if the Supreme Court decides for Kingdomware, that could force more set-asides on the part of agencies?
Yes, probably agencies will be more restrictive in how they set aside, and they will document it better, and also will be more proactive in seeking out small businesses that they can set aside all their contracts to. And essentially, Congress has been pushing the federal government to increase their goals, and there's hundreds of millions of dollars worth of federal contracts for small businesses, but sometimes federal agencies, at least Kingdomware is arguing, are not complying with this legislation, and that's why they brought this lawsuit to the United States Supreme Court.
So not too many federal procurement cases make it to the Supreme Court, I guess.
Yes, and 2016 is unusual in this respect because the United States Supreme Court also took another case, which is Universal Health Services versus United States, which is another case that will have a very dramatic impact on the federal contracting community. In this case, the question is whether a contractor that essentially has to comply with hundreds of different certifications, if they fail to comply with one, whether they're entitled to the payment, and if they submit a payment, whether they're liable under the False Claims Act. Historically, the federal government has been recovering billions of dollars in False Claims Act lawsuits. So the big question is whether if the contractor is non-compliant in some one certification, are they not entitled to the payment? And federal courts have been split, and this is probably why the United States Supreme Court decided to take this case. And we anticipate that if this case is decided in 2016, this will shift the focus maybe for all the lawsuits and also how the Department of Justice is approaching those cases.
We're speaking with Wojciech Kornacki, Associate Attorney at the Center Law and Consulting Group. And so I imagine you and your hundreds of colleagues in this particular field in Washington are really watching this pretty closely.
Yes, we are very interested in this case. In fact, some individuals consider that this is a victory, that the United States Supreme Court will look at this case. Just in last year, the Department of Justice recovered $3.5 billion in False Claims Act lawsuits. And out of that, $1.1 billion came from government contracts. And overall, since the implementation of the False Claims Act in 2009, it's been $4 billion that the federal contracting community paid to the government in recovery. So this will probably have a very significant impact, and also it will affect how companies try to mitigate with this potential risk in the future.
Because a lot of companies get caught in false claims cases or allegations of false claims, but what they have done maybe is some kind of administrative error, and often the companies themselves catch it, and yet they still get prosecuted by the Justice Department, even when they say, oops, we made this mistake, here's the payment we owe you.
Yeah, so this is a very careful balance that some companies have to undertake, because on one hand, they have to have a good and proactive compliance program where they can quickly identify if there's any misconduct and then resolve it if they have credible evidence and then report it to the United States government under the mandatory disclosure rule. On the other hand, there might be some former employees who raise allegations of misconduct, and then this creates very serious issues for the company. And some lawsuits have been continuing for years, and they're very expensive. And the company doesn't know how it will end. So from our side, the best recommendation is to have a proactive system where an employee can report any question or questionable conduct to the actual employer versus to the Department of Justice, because this could start the debarment process. It could also start a False Claims Act lawsuit.
And it's also expensive because a lot of these are key TAM cases where the employee is incentivized by the potential of a section of the payment or the fine that would go to that employee, that whistleblower.
Exactly, and I think that's a very good point, because of those $3.5 billion, half of a billion went actually to those individual employees or former employees who filed those lawsuits. And in 2014, there's been over 700 key time lawsuits where individuals were alleging misconduct from the company. Now, on September 9, 2015, the Department of Justice has also released a very important memorandum that will probably affect how a lot of businesses do their business with the federal government. Essentially, this memorandum seeks to hold individual corporate officers responsible for corporate misconduct. So before, like you said, a lot of companies would just have a settlement with the government and they could move on and do good business for the federal government. But now the Department of Justice wants to know, who is this individual corporate officer, what did they do, and how come they didn't stop before? And if the company is not willing to provide that information, the memorandum says that no corporation credit will be given to that company. So that's a major shift in how the Department of Justice is approaching this, and probably you will see the first cases in 2016 on how companies and the Department of Justice deal with this significant shift.
Of course, the orientation of the Justice Department could change a year after that, too, pending the results of the election.
Yes, but right now, based on this memorandum and based on the just the dramatic increase in the False Claims Act, and also based on the increased activity of all the different agencies in suspension and debarment, it looks like the trend is that there's a great exposure to federal contractors and a greater need for compliance and making sure you're proactive, you train your employees. And if something happens, use the mandatory disclosure, which is required anyway, but it kind of shields the company from the False Claims Act or a key time lawsuit, because if you already reported this to the government, then someone cannot just file a lawsuit based on the same misconduct. And usually we've seen that companies that use the mandatory disclosure and implement corrective measures are more successful in resolving those issues before they become a major fire.
So companies that want to hire, say, a compliance officer, which is something big companies have, maybe some mid-sized and small companies might need that also. What are the skills that make for a good compliance person that can keep you out of this kind of hot water?
Well, I think that's a very good question. But first, it's just making sure you have a culture of compliance in your company. So you want to make sure you have annual training, and maybe you have posters, you have a hotline. The Federal Acquisition Regulation says that you should adjust your compliance program to the size of your company. So like you said, a huge company will probably have a different compliance program than a small company. But essentially, each employee should know that they're a compliance officer, in a sense. If they see some misconduct, they should report it to the company. And then this corporate officer who's responsible for the overall compliance needs to take action. Now, it's also good, and we've seen this with the recent case with KBR that was decided this year, to involve your legal team or your attorneys when you investigate what really happened when there's this allegation. Because once you have the legal involvement, it will protect you under the attorney-client privilege communications. Those companies that don't utilize this and they just have their compliance officer perform a standard policy investigation will probably have to turn over that the results of the investigation if there's a lawsuit to the individual who's filing a lawsuit against them. But KBR last year was actually able to successfully defend their own internal investigation and communications with their attorneys from being turned over to the person who filed the False Claims Act lawsuit. And then just making sure you have random checks, constantly improve your system, and also maybe having an external audit or just a review of your policies. Now, those policies constantly change because there's new requirements. So we expect that in 2016 you will see a greater compliance needs for cybersecurity. So this will be probably another great part of improving compliance, because cybersecurity continues to play a significant portion in the future for all companies, and especially in 2016.
Good advice from attorney Wojciech Kornacki. He works procurement cases for Center Law and Consulting. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends.